Gatam, Matas, Tvam, Utanapad, Vishantita, Varam, Vararho, Umbuja, Naba, Adayor, Anantaram, Tvam, Ayam, Anga, Sushuma, Vinihi Kaman Vipayan Manogatam,
Vinihi Kaman Vipayan Manogatam,
Matastvam Otana Pade Vishankita, Param Varahor Mbuja Naba Padayor, Anantaram Tvam Vayam Anga Sushuma,
Anantaram Tvam Vayam Anga Sushuma,
Nihi Kaman Vipayan Manogatam,
Nihi Kaman Vipayan Manogatam,
Matastvam Otana Pade Vishankitaha,
Matastvam Otana Pade Vishankitaha,
Param Varahor Mbuja Naba Padayor,
Param Varahor Mbuja Naba Padayor,
Anantaram Tvam Vayam Anga Sushuma,
Anantaram Vayam Anga Sushuma,
Vinihi Kaman Vipayan Manogatam,
Vinihi Kaman Vipayan Manogatam,
Matastvam Otana Pade Vishankitaha,
Matastvam Otana Pade Vishankitaha,
Param Varahor Mbuja Naba Padayor, Anantaram Tvam Vayam Anga Sushuma,
Anantaram Tvam Vayam Anga Sushuma.
Please chant.
Whatever.
Anagatam. Within your mind. Mata,
from me.
Tvam,
you.
Uttanapade, Hosanna Maharaj Uttanapad. Avishankita, without hesitation. Varam, benediction. Vara, arha. Worthy to take benedictions. Ambuja, lotus flower. Naba, whose navel. Padayo, at his lotus feet. Anantaram,
instantly.
Tvam,
about you.
Vayam,
we.
Amga,
dear
Dhruva.
Shushuma,
have heard. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Dhruva Maharaj, son of Maharaj Uttanapad, we have heard that you are constantly engaged in transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known for his lotus navel. You are therefore worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please therefore ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj, the son of King Uttanapad, was already known throughout the universe as a great devotee of the Lord, constantly thinking of his lotus feet. Such a pure, uncontaminated devotee of the Lord is worthy to have all benedictions that can be offered by the demigods. He does not have to worship the demigods separately for such benedictions. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods, and he's personally offering whatever benediction Dhruva Maharaj would like to have from him. Srila Bilva Mangala Thakur stated, therefore, that all persons who engage in the devotional service of the Lord, all material benedictions wait like maidservants. Mukti Devi is just waiting at the door of the devotee to offer liberation. Or more than that, at any time. To be a devotee is therefore an exalted position. Simply by rendering transcendental loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can have all the benedictions of the world without separate endeavor. Lord Kuvera said to Dhruva Maharaj that he had heard that Dhruva was always in samadhi or thinking on the lotus feet of the Lord. In other words, he knew that for Dhruva Maharaj there was nothing desirable within the three material worlds. He knew that Dhruva would ask for nothing but to remember the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord constantly. Rinihi kaman vipayan manogatam matastvam utanapade vishankitaha paramparaho buja nabapadeyor anantaram tvam vayam angasushuma. My dear Dhruva Maharaj, son of Maharaj Uttanapad, we have heard that you are constantly engaged in transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known for his lotus navel. You are therefore worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please therefore ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me. Om Agyanatim Anandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Umanitam Gyanatya Shmaya Shri Gurudeva Namaha.
Thank you.
In Kuvera's request to Dhruva Maharaj, the pastime revisits this whole area of material facility. As we remember early in the pastime, Dhruva Maharaj, as a 5-year-old boy, impelled by the insult of his stepmother, wanting some kind of revenge, wanting to, out of this deep sense of disrespect, wants a facility greater than that of Lord Brahma. So then he goes through the purification of getting the darshan of the Lord, and all of that, just that desire just dissipates. He understands the foolishness. He's he's aspiring for broken pieces of glass when there's this very gorgeous jewel of the Lord. So he realizes his foolishness, and this comes through deep realizations, the deep stimulated by the darshan and the amazing benediction of the Lord. So now here, Kuvera is, it's kind of like, in American parlance, we would say this would be kind of a dumb question, because he already knew the answer. And as Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, indicates that. He says that he knew, this is a problem. In other words, he knew that for Dhruva Maharaj there was nothing desirable within the three worlds. He knew that Dhruva would ask for nothing but to remember the lotus feet of the Lord constantly. So this indicates a very prominent characteristic of a Vaishnava. And this isn't something, as we can see, that can be artificially achieved. It comes to realization. Kavi Yogendra, his instructions to King Nimi in the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, it describes a very interesting progression, which includes, is kind of a, there's an inbuilt analogy to this statement. Bhakti Paresh Anubhavo Viraktir Anicha Chaisha Chika Eka Kala Prapadyamana Shaya Tashmata Shush Pushti Shushti No Pushti Tushti Shudapayo Nugasam. So devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and detachment from everything else occur simultaneously for one who's engaged in the process of devotional service. In the same, this is in the same way, here's the analogy, as one who's engaged in eating, one who's engaged in the process of eating, he achieves pleasure, nourishment, and eradication of hunger with each morsel that he chews. Right? So, Jiva Goswami in his commentary on this verse unpacks this powerful analogy. So just like when we eat, we get pleasure. When we engage in bhakti, there's a very pleasurable result. We experience transcendental ecstasy that is remarkable, very remarkable. Depending upon our sincerity, Krishna reciprocates. He's pleased. And then we become very, very satisfied. So then, direct perception, okay, so that's That's this pleasure of eating as compared to devotion. You know, there's a very pleasurable experience with devotee. And so then when we eat, we become nourished. My son Prahlad, he has made a very thorough study of the process of nourishment. You know, he does his research on the internet, so he knows what it takes to stay in good health. So when we eat, we automatically achieve nourishment to the different parts of the body. And when we engage in devotional service, we can directly perceive the Lord in our lives. Okay, so there's a comparison in this analogy between this direct perception of the Lord and the nourishment that we derive from the eating process. Okay, so we're actually nourished when we perceive the presence of the Lord. Okay, so for instance, let us say that in the, you know, in the middle of a kirtan, in front of Sri Sri Panchatattva, which we just experienced prior to class, devotees oftentimes will experience a very unusual ecstasy, a reciprocation with the deities, and so there's some perception, it's there. Recently I received, here's another kind of level of perception, and this is also relevant. I recently received an email from Banu Swami explaining how devotees experience Paramatma realization. Now, that was always something that was elusive to me, you know, how I'm chanting my rounds, I'm trying to do my service, but what's this about Paramatma realization? So he put it in a very nice way. I used it in a PowerPoint slide in one of my Bhakti Shastri teaching assignments. And that's that we can understand, we begin to perceive the amazing intelligence within the material creation. That there's this intelligence behind it, and this is actually the super soul making all these different arrangements. Now, for devotees also, we see this, oftentimes see this powerful synchronicity, you know, in a sequence of events. How, let me think of an example. I'm sure you can all, you've experienced this. You know, as we go, you know, on the road back to Godhead, there'll be different encounters that we have along the way, a certain relationship or something, and that will open up, you know, some realization, you know, new direction in our devotional service. It's a turning point, and then that will put us into another relationship, and you know, the person that we're having the relationship also, that's a meaningful experience. You know, there's something that they learn from that. You know, it goes on and on and on. And this is all being arranged by the super soul, right? These kind of events. Of course, we also understand that this is just, you know, a manifestation of Krishna. So that perception, and we can perceive Krishna in our service, we can understand, you know, how we're actually being assisted in our path back to Godhead by our service, how we're getting purified. You know, even when Krishna arranges some intense purification, well, we suffer, we go through a lot of distress, right? But then a devotee begins to realize, actually, and this is, of course, our philosophy, and after many, many years of perhaps going through these kind of things, then we start to see, actually, here's Krishna coming to me again, you know, so that I can, you know, really cry to him in the holy name, in a, like a child for his mother, and also that I can just get fed up with this viparyo smriti, this role reversal, you know, this identification. Bhayam duti yabini veshatasha adishadi petasha viparyo smriti. You know, this misidentification of myself as the body. You know, rather than as Krishna's servant. And then with that misidentification, with this bodily concept, I completely forget the role that I have. I'm your servant, Krishna. You know, so this illusion's gradually dissipated, actually sometimes very rapidly dissipated. by distressful circumstances. And these are not under the laws of karma. So oftentimes we hear devotees say, well, I got some really bad karma now. I just checked with my astrologer and it's really coming down on me. But Brahma Samhita, Karmani Nirdahati Kintucha Bhakti Bhajan, when one takes up the process of devotional service, he's no longer under the laws of karma. It's directly Krishna that's arranging these events that sometimes just bring us to our knees. They're so heavy, but it's not that the events necessarily are heavy, but it's because we're an illusion that they're heavy. So then the severing of these attachments, you know, this is basically what's accelerated during these times of distress. That's what's heavy. That's what's heavy. But if we just tolerate, we go through it. Now, I remember one very, very good example in my own devotional career. This is a mixed audience, so it's a little bit, you know, intense in terms of what you would normally speak about in a mixed audience, a co-educational situation. But I'm gonna do it anyway. I had just learned this verse 10:14:8 from Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna after the Brahma Vimohan Lila. This goes back to, I think, probably 1984. And this verse, for those of you who don't know the number, it's the verse on page 92 of Nectar Devotion that Prabhupada said should be the guiding principle for all devotees. Okay? And the Sanskrit's Tate Nukampam Shukshamikshamano, Bunjane Vatmakritam Vipakam, Ridvag Vapubir Vidadan Namaste, Jivete Yo Mukti Pade Sadayabak. One who always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds, and goes on rendering service with body, mind, and words, offering obeisances from the core of his heart to the Lord, that person, Sadayabhak, he becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service. So there was a sannyasi that advised me to learn this shloka because I was in, you know, I think it was the first maha distress test that I'd been through as a devotee. I mean, I got it both barrels. Oh man, it was so heavy. And so he said, you should learn it. So I diligently learned it, and I quoted in Bhagavatam classes without too much realization, but I would quote it. And then I just happened to be in Vrindavan Dham. And this was pre-Bisleri water days. Okay. Now, if any of you remember, any of you Westerners can remember pre-Bisleri water days, this would be when devotees would be flat out sick with dysentery almost continuously when they would come to the holy times, right? Vedavyasa Prabhu is nodding his head in deep realization of the phenomena. He's been there and done it. So anyway, I contracted what is known as blood dysentery. And Purandar, who was the first big book distributor in our movement. And, you know, he went through some intense purification, kind of distanced himself from the movement at one point. But he just happened to be at Vrindavan at the time, and he said, oh, Jamashtami. Because it was amazing. It wasn't just that I had, you know, loose motion, but there was an accompanying, really incredible symptom of excruciating pain that must have simulated the pain of a woman in childbirth. I mean, it was so heavy. You know, and Karandar Prabhu said to me, this is, we used to call this the knot. Okay? and it would come in cyclical intervals. And it was just so painful, you know, I would just be grimacing as I was divinely placed. I don't know if that's the correct use of words, but I was on the toilet, okay? And I spent, you know, probably about 60% of my waking hours so situated. And then I go through these cyclical, you know, intense pain that I couldn't, you know, it was just like, I don't know if anybody's been to this where you just can't even speak, or you can do a grimace, you know, like just, you know, bite your teeth, you know, as tight as you possibly can and just wait for it to pass. Does that sound like childbirth? Trying to make it a little interactive here, but I can't remember. No, maybe in previous lives, you know, I went through that. I was present during two, so it was seemed pretty intense. So anyway, what I did in this abominably disgusting situation, in the midst of Vrindavan Dham and the Krishna Balaram guest house, I recited in my mind, Tate nukampam sukshamikshamano. And lo and behold, it was ecstatic. I got such you know, I was just in bliss, and it wasn't just normal bliss. It was like, it was blissful bliss. And I mean, it was like incredible. I just felt like Krishna had introduced me to a very, very deep and loving friend. This became my friend for life at that point. And then it wasn't a, you know, I mean, I went through the maha pain test, you know, like about maybe a year and a half before. And then I got, you know, this kind of solidified the learning experience, you know, that this is actually Krishna coming to me in this form of intense distress for me to take shelter in him. So, so there's another way that as we go down the path back to Godhead that we start experiencing Krishna's pleasure. And it gives us nourishment. Because in the midst of these distress tests, where we're, you know, if we can see it's coming from Krishna, Krishna's behind it, my God, you know, it's not nearly as bewildering. But then there's also an opportunity, if we continue to engage in service with body, mind, and words, offering our obeisances to that great personality that sent the stress test our way so that we could get purified and come back to him and cry very deeply to the holy name, then, and not bewildering at all, is actually blissful. I mean, when Prabhupada was, you know, in the final days, the doctors that were attending him were just completely bewildered as to how he was managing without very high dosages of morphine. Because people in his condition would normally just be taking shelter of morphine. But Prabhupada wasn't doing that at all. He just kept doing his service. And, you know, there's this one video that Yadubar Prabhu and Vishakha Mataji made of Prabhupada's. This is the last recorded translation. 10:13:53. The chapter kept going. There's another, like, 13, 14 verses. But it's just amazing. Prabhupada's, you know, in this, you know, incredibly physically debilitated condition. You know, he just lay down, didn't open his eyes, could barely talk. He hadn't eaten for weeks, so emaciated. And here he is, you know, Jayadvaita Swami is holding the microphone for the dictaphone to his face. Padyumna is translating the Sanskrit. And you know, Tamal Krishnamurti is just standing over him, and, you know, laying in his bed in Vrindavan. Prabhupada, Tamal Krishnamurti is right behind him. And And Prabhupada's, you know, he's just whispering. And when you go and look, you see the video, and there's some, you know, the subtitles, what do you call it? You know, the words are written on the screen, you know, and you know, so in case you can't detect everything he's saying. And then you go to the 10th canto, 13th chapter, 53rd verse, and it's verbatim, not even edited. No, just completely crystal clear. Very, very intense meditation. How could he go on without morphing? That's how. He kept doing his service. Radhika Nagar Prabhu was telling me about this discussion that very senior Vaishnavas were having in Govardhan this last Kartik. Shauri Prabhu was there, Shauri wasn't there, he was here. Jayadvaita Swami, Danadhar Swami, Vaisheshakra Prabhu, Keshava Bharti Maharaj, and they were discussing equanimity. We're enjoined by Krishna and Bhagavad Gita that we should maintain equanimity in happiness and distress. So how do you do that? Now their conclusion was, it's not that when you're in a situation where the material energy is creating disturbing circumstances, you know, either bodily or mentally, it's not that that's, you know, necessarily not there. It wasn't that Prabhupada had, you know, had taken some type of anesthesia. That wasn't the case. He experienced that. But the essence of the equanimity is that one continues with the service and continues with the sadhana practices, and that's equanimity. You know, we're sentient beings, so we're going to feel it. You know, if someone, you know, gives us a right hook to our subtle body, right? We're going to feel it. But doesn't, if we don't stop our service, if we keep going, we're on that platform of equanimity. And, you know, we haven't interrupted our devotional service, you know, as we're within the parameters of Uttama Bhakti, Anyabhilashita Sunyam. Krishna Anushilanam, it's a continuous cultivation. So we keep going in spite of that. And then what happens? We get realization, you know, of Krishna's presence. And that's very nourishing. That's our source of spiritual strength. Just like, you know, the nutrients from what we eat, you know, that gives us physical strength. Okay, so then when Gopala Dev, he's got this huge plate of prasadam, and he's just finished it. And so he's in the brahmachari kitchen, and they come along and they flap a whole big spoonful of sabji on his plate. You know, his hunger has been eradicated, so it's very difficult for him to want to eat anymore. So that's what happens through the process of bhakti. We become deeply satisfied by it, and we're not attracted to anything else. That's how detachment actually manifest. It's not artificially achieved. We can't say, when that beautiful girl walks by, you know, okay, I am not attached to that beautiful form of this woman. That's not how it's done. It's not done by mental gymnastics. It's done because we're so deeply satisfied through bhakti. Just as Gopal Dev was so deeply satisfied, his hunger was eradicated. So he got so satisfied that he just didn't want to eat anymore. But we don't want it. You know, we don't want sense gratification if we're getting the reciprocation that Krishna can so readily give us to the Lodini Shakti is so superior. Brahm Jisvan Vartate. This is the process of how devotees can renounce. No other way. The artificial attempts to do that are fraught with many difficulties. Yenye ravandaksha vimukti maninas toyashtad bhavarava shuddha buddhaya aruya kuchena paramputam tata patantido nadita yushmad angriya. So this is for the, there's discussion here about Bilva Mangala Thakur. He says that the devotee doesn't aspire for liberation. And this sometimes confuses people because there's different kinds of liberation. Get into that a little bit later. But what does he... doesn't aspire for it. And, as a matter of fact, in that verse that's quoted in this regard, Bilva Mangala Thakur sees it as hellish, that liberation. This is a hellish condition. That form of liberation, that's Sayukta Mukti, that's where, there's one merges into the Brahman, and there's no facility for interacting with the Lord, which is his life, so therefore it's hellish for the devotee. But, the devotee, so this Yenye Ravandaksha Vimukti Maninas. So there's many people that perform severe austerities to achieve the supreme goal, the highest destination. Vimukti maninas, but they're liberated in their minds only. Why? Because they've stopped, they're not aware. They've disconnected from the lotus feet of the Lord and their service. Patantyada. So they fall down. It's guaranteed. It's not, Prabhupada says in some purports, it's not really liberation. Like Sharsti, and Samipya, and Sarupya, and Salokya, those are actually liberation because you don't fall down. But Sayuja, come back down again because it's an artificial situation. And one doesn't experience the happiness, the bliss of reciprocation with the Lord, so it's very unstable, right? But devotional service has this incredible facility that's provided by Krishna to achieve the highest levels of happiness, so renunciation is very easy. So then this brings up another point in the purport. I won't go into this whole thing about the, mukti now, because it's limited time, but this point, Bilva Mangala Thakur stated, therefore, that for persons who engage in the devotional service of the Lord, all material benedictions wait like maidservants. Mukti Devi is just waiting at the door of the devotee to offer liberation. Or more than that, in this verse from Krishna Karnamrita of Bilva Mangala Thakur, is a Dharma Artha Kama also comes. He's waiting with folded hands at the door of the devotee, waiting to serve him. Okay, so this brings up this whole concept of faith. It's like we know how Prabhupada, talk about faith. He left India. He had 40 rupees. Has anybody tried to spend rupees in America? It doesn't work. They don't want it. It's not exchangeable. You can't even go to a bank and exchange it. What to speak of, go to a 7-Eleven and buy a carton of milk. You can't do it. It's worthless. So that's what he did. He had, what was it, three trunks of Bhagavatams, first canon. Three trunks? Anybody know? How many trunks? Three. He had 40 rupees, but he had faith that Krishna would take care of. Shara Shabde Vishvas Kahe Shuddhi Dhanishchaya Krishna Bhakti Kale Sarvakama Kritahoy. So faith means that one has complete confidence that simply by engaging in devotional service, all subsidiary activities are automatically achieved. So that dharma, artha, karma, moksha. And some purports, Prabhupada says, devotees don't worry about moksha because they're already liberated. Now that, I guess that opens up the discussion of all the different ways liberation is used, you know, in Prabhupada's books. We've got the five forms of mukti. So I already kind of covered that. I mean, Sharsti means to experience the same opulence of the Lord. This would be, you know, if we went back to the spiritual world, we would be in that situation. Samipya, we'd have equal relationship with the Lord, like the cowherd boys. So that just kind of comes. We don't aspire for it. We just want to serve the Lord, but that would happen. Savokya, yeah, we'd be on the same planet as the Lord. Sarupya, generally speaking, Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't aspire at all for Sarupya. This is not the rasa, you know, of Braj Bhakti. That's the Vaikuntha loka, kind of rasa of awe and reverence. Anyway, so all the things were provided, you know, in due course of time. Just like Prabhupada got exactly, this reminds me. Earlier in this canto, when Lord Vishnu enters the arena of sacrifice, the Prita Maharaj, there's a very, very interesting comment. It's referenced by the Acharyas in their commentaries on 10.14.8. Tatenu kampam shukshumikshmano. And that's that, in this pastime, in that chapter, there's a description about how a devotee, just like a son, my sons don't always see it this way, but a son, this is the analogy, sometimes with analogies there's some slight imperfections, but a son has complete faith in his father that he's acting in his best interest. Sometimes a father, you know, when a son runs out and almost gets hit by a Mack truck, or a Tata Sumo or whatever, he just smashes it, you know, just so he won't do it again. But the son, you know, he may cry and everything, but he has complete confidence. His father's acting in his best interest. Right? Other times, you know, the father embraces the boy, gives him, pops a burfi in his mouth, you know, super sweet. Son knows that he's acting in his best interest. It's a little easier, but even in the time of chastisement, he has confidence like that. So this is the same mentality that a devotee has. He understands, you know, happiness, distress, you know, heavy test, everything's going right. Whatever the circumstances, it's Krishna is making the arrangements for his betterment. Because there's so much love that Krishna has for the devotee. In the purporting of 10.14.8, the point is made that to enter the sun planet, one must be fire-like. So this process of bhakti is a rigid purificatory process. This is, you know, and the suffering that the devotee encounters purifies him from any vestiges of the enjoying spirit, which will entangle him in the material world. So that suffering is part of this rigid purificatory process that enables us to go back to Godhead, you know, and enables us to be fire-like, enables us to be on the transcendental platform. Okay, so the mass exodus is beginning. I'd better stop now and ask if there's any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu. Okay, Ramchandra Kaviraj. You're our future hope, so let's hear it. Sri Shripu.
Comment and a question. The comment is that beautiful pastime with Prabhupada on his disappearance bed. Prabhupada earlier had revealed to the Kaviraj how he was able to do that. How he was able to be in a body that was practically no body anymore, with no, just skin and bone. for an ordinary man would be screaming bloody murder, you know, 24/7. The Kaviraj is trying to administer some medicine, some Yogendra Ras or Rasayana or something. And so Prabhupada, finally, he said to the man, who was a Ramanuji Vaishnav, he said, Bhavoshadach Chotramano Biramat, which means that hearing about Krishna, this is the real medicine, and that medicine is so wonderful, it's so full of ecstasy. And the Kaviraj just laughed. He said, actually, you're right. Because materially it was hopeless.
Yeah.
But spiritually, Prabhupada was drinking the nectar of Krishna Katha and speaking it. So that's how he was, as you say, he was beyond the body. He was completely, I mean, we got that copy. When we got that 13th chapter at the BBT, we were amazed that Prabhupada is speaking so slowly and practically barely, you know, you hear his speeches kind of slurred.
It's like we're getting shot. Shot by the material energy. Okay, here we go. Get it. Yeah, we got to recharge the microphone. Shut that one off. Why don't you try that microphone? I have an intuition that it will work now. All you need is to keep it on, but just turn the volume down. Okay, we're there. Funny, huh? Well, of course, the main caution that our acharyas give, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Prabhupada in particular, gives, is not that upadesharam, the essence of all instructions is to always stay in Vrindavan 24 hours a day and hear and chant under the guidance of a resident of Vrindavan, essentially practice Raghunuga Bhakti. So that's the essence of all instructions, that we should hear and chant 24 hours a day in Vrindavan. If we can't be there personally, then we should be there in our mind. So that's very natural. That's what, you know, the ultimate conclusion of our devotional service should be. But what they cautioned against is prematurely taking this up. And so what is it, when would it be premature? If we're still deeply within Anartha Nivritti. Right? And no question of any kind of practice of Raganuga Bhakti, you know, if we're until at least Nishta, till we're very, very steady in executing our devotional responsibilities, and we relish them. You know, Nishta means Madhyama. So a Madhyama Adhikari, Madhyama Bhagavat, you know, he loves to chant his rounds. It's not a, you know, like Maharaj was saying, I just want to get my rounds done, you know, so I can do what's really important. This is their most important activity because it's so relishable, and one has such deep understandings of its value, how Krishna's coming to me. Krishna's not different than his name. So there's a deep experience there. So mostly, you know, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Gaudiya Vaishnavism was in such disarray because of the name of practicing Raganuga Bhakti. Many, many people were engaging, you know, having their Rasalila, you know, the gopis, they were engaging in illicit activities. So they weren't following Shruti Smriti Purana De Pancharatra Vitimima. You know, if you don't follow scriptural injunctions, then it simply creates disturbance in society. Now, there's an interesting point that, you know, for devotees, there may not be so many devotees within ISKCON that have an awakening of greed. That's the requirement for entering Raganuga Bhakti. Does that mean that we don't go to Goloka Vrindavan? See, that's, you know, the ways of thinking. Well, if I'm going to go to Goloka Vrindavan, there's a conception, well, then I got to practice Raganuga Bhakti. So I'm in a dilemma. I may not be ready, but I better get there because my life's getting towards an end. You know, so then there's this dilemma. Well, if I prematurely enter Bhakti, you know, Raganuga Bhakti, then I may become an aparadi and lose it all. So what the heck do I do? Okay, so there's an answer for that. And once Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, it's very difficult for me to think of Krishna because I'm always meditating on temple finances. So Prabhupada said to him, so many lifetimes you wasted on yourself. Just give this one lifetime to pushing on this movement. And even if at the end you are not completely perfect, then Krishna, Mahaprabhu himself will come and personally take you back to Godhead. So this is a special dispensation. In the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, there's this, I'm trying to think, maybe it's 57 or 47, but there's a description about how the acharyas, the great acharyas, are so intimate to Krishna, they're so attached to service, they're so confidential, that they discover the ways and means to cross the ferocious ocean of material existence. And Krishna accepts that means because of the deep devotion they have. And these acharyas, they leave this means behind for future devotees. And Krishna accepts that means for future devotees. He's, because of the deepness of the relationship between the devotee and Krishna, the acharya and Krishna. So he's bound. Krishna's bound to accept this means. So in ISKCON, all we got to do is stay on the boat. We got to stay in ISKCON and keep pushing it on, no matter how tough it gets. don't bloop. Don't go outside of ISKCON. All you got to do is keep pushing it on. And we saw this. There are many devotees that are in this room now that saw this with Nirguna Prabhu. A very, very dedicated book distributor. Sureshwar was very close friends with him. He was my Sangatan partner for 18 years. Jananivas and Pankajungri were right there when it took place. There's no any question in your mind that he went back to Godhead? I mean, it was powerful. He understood his Sarup City. He came back to consciousness after the doctor felt he was a goner. He came back and participated in the kirtan that was meant for him. And he raised his arms when the doctor said, you know, he won't regain consciousness. And I announced after Mangalartik that he wouldn't regain consciousness and the devotees should come and chant for him. You know, it's just powerful. And it's just, enacted Prabhupada's promise. You know, it was a classic example. And it's not the only one. Many, many examples of senior devotees leaving after giving their lives to pushing this movement and achieving a very exalted consciousness and going back to the spiritual world. So we don't have to worry about that in one sense. But there are some devotees that may have this awakening of greed. So it shouldn't be that they're driven away. Say, okay, but they should be strictly following. They keep doing their service of pushing the movement on. That taste may be there, they may be very attracted to the Braj pastimes. And so read it and go for it. That's a process. But it's not that way for everybody. This is Kali Yuga. And we got this international society, so it may not work for everybody. But don't feel bad. Mahaprabhu will come and get you at the end. Right? Okay? Hare Krishna. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Rama.